This is a Bleacher Bunch production for the Fans First Sports Network. Please check out our other shows as well, Cubba Cubby Blue, Cubs PS Plus, and The Sun Ranto Show.
Play ball.
Round the internet we go, where we end up no one knows. Sit back and enjoy the show. Down the baseball rabbit hole, down the baseball rabbit.
Hello, and welcome to the fourth inning of the Baseball Rabbit Hole podcast. This is the podcast where I look up some information about baseball and follow wherever it leads. This episode, the rabbit hole I'll be diving into is the All-Star Game, that annual exhibition game played between the National League and the American League, showcasing the players who were good for half of a season.
Good one.
The first All-Star Game took place in 1933. And it has been played every year except 1945, which was canceled due to World War II travel restrictions, and also in 2020 because of the COVID-19 pandemic. I am recording this in 2023, and that means there have been 93 games played in 91 seasons. Wait, what? How is it possible the All-Star Game was canceled twice, but there are more All-Star Games than seasons? Well, it's because the MLB actually had two All-Star Games each season from 1959 to 1962. That means over those 4 years, there were four extra All-Star Games. And then you take away the 2 years that weren't All-Star Games, and you get 93 games in 91 seasons. Now, I wish there was an interesting reason behind why they had two All-Star Games each season, but it was all about money. The All-Star Game was always a big draw each year, so they decided to have two of them to make more money for player pension funds. In those days, many of the players still had off-season jobs because ownership had all the power and salaries were still low. Despite always drawing great crowds, the second All-Star Game was canceled after 1962 because it just seemed unneeded, and the ownership finally agreed to just give players more money for the pension from that one All-Star Game. Okay, so now we know how many games there were, but which league has won the most games? The AL holds a three-game lead with a record of 47-44-2. Despite the closeness of the records, it rarely feels like the leagues are that close when they play the games because each league tends to dominate different eras of the game. In the first 10 years, the AL won 7 of the All-Star Games. In the next 2 games, each league won 1, but then the AL went on a 4-year run, followed by the NL going on a 4-year run. Over the next 38 games, the American League would only win back-to-back All-Star Games one time. The NL went on a 29-8-1 run over those 33 years from 1954 to 1987. By 1987, the National League had a 37-20-1 lead over the AL. But all of that changed between 1988 and 2017, as the American League went 23-6 with one tie in 2002, which evened up the wins and losses at 43-43-2. All of this is to say that despite how equal the records are overall, the All-Star Game has been anything but equal for most of its existence. In the summer of 2023, the National League broke a 10-season drought that included 9 straight losses to the American League. The only time they didn't lose was when they didn't play the game in 2020. The current records as of 2023 is the American League with 47 wins and the National League with 44 wins. And then, of course, the 2 tie games. Records are great and all, but I was really more interested in how the game got started. And after this break, we're going to go down that rabbit hole and see the origins of the All-Star Game. Hey, this is the part of the show where I would normally tell you, go to my Patreon and support the show. But here's the thing. I screwed up the Patreon one time, so I went back to do it again. And when I was doing it, I thought to myself, I really shouldn't be doing a Patreon because I don't put these shows out very often, and it really just doesn't seem to make sense. So, if you really want to support the show monetarily, hit me up on PayPal or Venmo at mcotton2019. That's the same for both of them. And you can give me money there if you'd like. Otherwise, if you really want to do something Patreon style, go to Patreon for Sonranto, S-O-N-R-A-N-T-O. And that's where I do my other podcast. You can give money there, and that would also support what I do. Hey, everybody. You know what this podcast needs? More listeners like you. If you want to help me out, please share this podcast around to your friends and let them all know that they should subscribe as well. Another way to support the podcast would be to give me a 5-star rating somewhere on the internet, wherever podcasts are rated. Thanks, and now back down the rabbit hole. Obviously, 91 All-Star games does not cover the entirety of the existence of Major League Baseball. It actually took them 57 years before they had the first All-Star game. And because the MLB has never been good about promoting the game, it won't surprise you that the league didn't even come up with the idea. Chicago Mayor Edward J. Kelly wanted a major sporting event to happen during the 1933 Chicago World's Fair to draw people to the city. The Great Depression was in full swing, and everyone was looking for ways to draw people out for events. Chicago Tribune sports editor Arch Ward came up with the All-Star Game, in which the fans would choose the starters and the managers would choose the rest of the players. Despite being a seemingly obvious good idea, it took some convincing for Kennesaw Mountain Landis, the commissioner of baseball, to approve the midseason exhibition game. Even then, it was approved only as a one-time event because Major League Baseball wasn't sure that people would be interested in the greatest players in the league all being on two teams playing against each other. The Tribune called it the game of the century and worked with papers all across the country to distribute the fan vote ballots. On July 6th, it was estimated that 49,000 people attended the game of the century. This game featured 20 future Hall of Famers, but the true star of that game was Babe Ruth, who not only hit a two-run homer, but also killed the National League's hopes for a comeback with a great catch at the wall in the eighth inning. Despite having no foresight whatsoever, Major League Baseball was able to see how successful this game had been, so they decided to try and schedule another game for the following year at the Polo Grounds in New York City. The game has traveled from ballpark to ballpark every year since. Generally, the game is flip-flopped from an American League field to a National League field each year. The home team is determined by which league owns the field. There were exceptions to this early in the game's history when both the Phillies and the Athletics played in the same park, Scheib Park, in Philadelphia, and the Cardinals and Browns both played in Sportsman Park in St. Louis. For these games, the home team was determined by whichever league was scheduled to have the game that year. The only other exception was in 2016, in the second year of a 3-year run, when the game was played at all National League ballparks. That year, the American League was the home team at Petco Park, which is where the San Diego Padres play, so the National League was the visiting team that year. The reason the American League was the home team in a National League ballpark goes back to 2002, the second time an All-Star game had ended in a tie. The All-Star game had always just been an exhibition game, just to highlight the players. In 2002, the game was tied at 7-7 at the end of the 11th inning. Both teams had already used all their pitchers, so managers Joe Torre of the Yankees and Bob Brenly of the Diamondbacks decided to just call it a tie. This should not have been a big deal at an exhibition game, but the fans in Milwaukee booed and sports writers wrote bad things. So, Bud Selig, the commissioner, made a knee-jerk decision to have the All-Star game actually matter in the following seasons. Selig proclaimed that starting in 2003, the winner of the All-Star Game would determine who got home field advantage in the World Series that year. This led to the American League having home field advantage in the World Series for the next 7 years. And in the 14 years this rule was in place, the American League had the home field advantage for the World Series 11 times. So, getting back to why the American League had to be the home team for that game. Being the home team is an advantage in baseball, and normally the AL would have had the opportunity to be the home team in 2016 because they had played in a National League park the year before. But for some reason, Major League Baseball decided to schedule the All-Star Game at 4 straight National League ballparks. So to make up for that, they just went ahead and made the American League the home team in a National League ballpark for 2016. All this really did was to highlight how ridiculous the whole All-Star Game mattering was. So after this debacle, the Major League Baseball realized that the home field advantage rule was ridiculous, and they finally ended it, thus returning the MLB All-Star Game to exhibition game status. And all of that happened because of that one tie in 2002. And if you're wondering about the other tie, that came in 1961 during the second All-Star Game of that season. It was called due to rain after they had completed 9 innings and were still tied. Do you know what happened after that? Nothing. It was an exhibition game. Nobody was supposed to care. It was just supposed to be fun. And I guess people just didn't take themselves so seriously back then. With the All-Star Game jumping around from stadium to stadium to stadium, every stadium built before the year 2000 has hosted an All-Star Game, except for Tropicana Field in St. Petersburg, Florida, which is the home of the Tampa Bay Rays. With the Rays trying to get a new stadium, it might never get one. This kind of got me to thinking about which ballpark has hosted the most All-Star Games. And I'll get to that right after the break. The ballpark that has hosted the most All-Star Games is also the first ballpark to host an All-Star Game, Comiskey Park in Chicago. From 1933 to 1990, when they tore down Comiskey Park, well, the original one, Comiskey held 31 All-Star Games. And if you're wondering how that's possible, let's head down that rabbit hole.
Hey!
So you are probably trying to figure out how Comiskey Park was able to host so many All-Star Games when I just told you that the All-Star Game changed venues every year. Well, the answer to that question is the Negro Leagues. Like the rest of America, baseball was segregated due to the efforts of ignorant racists. But that doesn't mean black people didn't play baseball. There have been black ball clubs from the beginning who would barnstorm around the country and play games wherever they could schedule them against both black and white teams. In 1920, Rube Foster, owner of the Chicago American Giants, was able to organize several of these teams into the first Negro National League at a meeting in Kansas City, Missouri, establishing the National Association of Colored Professional Baseball. The league spawned rival leagues like the Eastern Colored League, the American Negro League, and the Negro Southern Leagues, but all of them would fail by the time the country was deep into the Great Depression. Despite the Great Depression taking its toll on every league, and even being even worse on the Negro Leagues, there were still black baseball clubs that continued to play. In 1933, Gus Greenlee, owner of the Pittsburgh Crawfords, established a second National Negro League. Everyone was aware of the upcoming Game of the Century to be held at the World's Fair in Chicago, and the Negro National League decided they wanted to showcase their players in the same way. So they created the East-West Game to be played in August of that year. The Chicago Defender and the Pittsburgh Courier, two of the major black newspapers of the time, counted fan votes to determine their rosters. Chicago, being centrally located, was chosen as the location, and the Negro National League also got the same venue as the MLB. Comiskey Park hosted both versions of the first All-Star Game in 1933. The game featured 12 future Hall of Fame members, including Oscar Charleston as the lead vote-getter. The other Hall of Famers taking part in the game were Cool Papa Bell, Biz Mackey, Judd Wilson, Judy Johnson, Satchel Paige, Andy Cooper, Pop Lloyd, who is the manager of the East team, Turkey Stearns, Willie Wells, Mule Settles, and Willie Foster. Although he didn't make it to the Baseball Hall of Fame, Fats Jenkins was on the East team, and he eventually made it into the Basketball Hall of Fame. But that's a completely different rabbit hole. This game drew 20,000 spectators for the 11-7 West victory. In the inaugural season of the second Negro National League, marked by various struggles, the East-West game was an unmitigated success. The East-West game was played 35 times over the next 30 years, with Comiskey Park hosting most of the games. They played two games in 39, 42, 46, 47, and 48, with one game being played at Comiskey and the other game being played in a more eastern city for those seasons. Comiskey had at least one East-West game every year, except for 1958, 1961, and 1962, which was the final year the game was ever played. In the years after Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier, the Negro Leagues and the communities they supported suffered. While integration of baseball was good for the country as a whole, pushing it a little closer towards equality, it was bad for the Negro Leagues, as their best players were recruited by Major League Baseball, thus creating the impression that the teams that were left were not as good. The final East-West game was played in Kansas City, Missouri in 1962. The final East-West game was played in Kansas City, Missouri in 1962. Jackie Robinson was given the key to the city. Unfortunately, the league officially shut down shortly thereafter. The history of the Negro Leagues is being kept alive in Kansas City at the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. So if you want to learn more about the Negro Leagues, the East-West games, and the players that made them successful, head down to Kansas City and give them a visit. I've been down there with my children, and it's a great time. Look, I started with one All-Star game and ended up with a completely different one. And now, I think I'm done with this rabbit hole. So, until next time, keep rounding those bases.
You're out!
This episode of the Baseball Rabbit Hole was written by Michael Cotton, produced by Michael Cotton, edited by Michael Cotton, recorded by Michael Cotton, all on Audacity. The only thing I don't do is the theme song. That is by the incomparable Danny Rocket. Take it away, Danny.
Round the internet we go, where we end up no one knows. Sit back and enjoy the show. Down the baseball rabbit hole. Down the baseball rabbit hole.